Welcome to Comics,
episode
266.
This week, we talk about
Before Watchmen, Minutemen.
Visit us at welcometocomics.com. Listen to past episodes, see what we're reading next, send us a message, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. This episode is supported by listeners like you. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics.
And now, the cast.
Although, you know, it looks cool and it's good, but it's not as good as the hype reel from Comic-Con. That hype reel from Comic-Con is so good.
Well, yeah. But I thought this trailer was pretty good. I thought Donnie Yen was pretty cool.
And I love that Forrest Whitaker is playing a character from the Clone Wars cartoon. I love that continuity.
I forget what he's from the Onderon arc, but I don't remember what his name. Oh,
Saw.
Something Saw Gerrera.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And a not so veiled allusion to Central American guerrilla fighters.
Well, the Clone Wars show is like, it's full of that kind of stuff, I think.
Yeah. And it's so, I mean, it's sci-fi. That's kind of how sci-fi works. So it's fine.
But I think it looks great. I think I'm more excited for this than I was for episode 7. And I was trying to figure out why. And I think it's because this is outside of the main story.
Yeah.
So I feel like it'll be more new than episode 7 was. Which, you know, that's very debatable, because it's still Star Wars, and we already kind of know the outcome, because we know the Rebels get the plans for the Death Star. But for something about this just looks very cool to me, so.
See, I agree. I'm really psyched to see, like, how they're going to do it.
Yeah, and I think the reason everybody's psyched for it is because there's a really high level of confidence that it's not going to suck. Like, there was the original Star Wars, and we all lived on that for a long time, and then the prequels came, and everybody was crushed. And when Force Awakens came out, sure, it's a little derivative of the originals, and all the criticisms are there, sure, but it's a fine movie, and it's fun to watch. And, like, I've rewatched it a couple times now, and I see the derivative stuff in there, and I see the jokes that fall flat, but it's a fine, fun movie, and it is leagues better than the prequels.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
So you look at this Rogue One trailer, and going into Force Awakens, like, the trailers look cool and things sounded good, but I don't know about anybody else, but I definitely went into it like, okay, I'm holding out hope, but if it's prequels, I had to steel myself. I had to be prepared for the possibility that it was like the prequels. And then when it wasn't, I felt good. And now I'm going into this knowing, okay, I'm confident that Disney and the creative team and the people who have stewarded this property know what they have and are working with it in a way that I'm going to be satisfied with. So I'm confident at the very least this is going to be a fun, enjoyable movie. And it might not be fantastic, but it's going to be a fun, enjoyable heist movie in the Star Wars universe. And I'm confident it's going to be good because of that Force Awakens.
It could be fantastic, though.
It could be.
Yes.
It could be fucking amazing. And I really love that it's on, like, tropical beach with the AT-ATs. Oh, my God.
Well, you know, some people I talked to about this are disappointed in the fact that there aren't, like, lightsabers in the trailer and stuff. But, you know, I'm fine with that, because there is so much more happening in the Star Wars universe than just the Jedi versus Sith thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I read the Star Wars Battlefront Twilight Company novel, and I really liked that. It wasn't the best book I've ever read, but it was cool because there was no Jedi and no lightsabers in it. Well, that's not true. Vader was in it too, but he was like this unstoppable. He was more of an unstoppable menace, like, or engine of destruction than he is in other times when we see him, because the people that he's fighting against are just regular rebel soldiers.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was really cool. I'm glad to see something like that on the big screen.
Yeah, and they've said that his portrayal in this is going to be much more like it is in Rebels, which is awesome because his portrayal in Rebels is fucking terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're saying, he's just unstoppable. Like there's Ezra and Kanan, and they are just like nothing to him, just nothing at all. And it's like, it's great. You're a Jedi and a Padawan, and I will crush the shit out of you. You are fucking nothing to me. Yeah.
So it looks cool.
So we didn't talk about any of the stuff that came out of Comic-Con. I mentioned the hype reel, but there's like a shit ton of news. Let's see. The next Thor movie, Thor Ragnarok. They showed Planet Hulk armor for that. So that's fucking sick, because Planet Hulk is baller as hell.
Yeah, I hope they don't like somehow try to jam the Planet Hulk storyline into it. I hope it is kind of they're just taking some of the ideas from that. There's a storyline from the comics where like Loki tricks Hulk into coming to Asgard and to like wreck shit. And so, I mean, it could be something like that. Who knows? But it looks, the armor, however they tend or choose to use it, looks fucking awesome. So.
My hope is that they drop the armor and they drop the, like, you know, because use more of that together Hulk, the Hulk that's not, like, just raging out of the control, but the version that has a little bit more together, and show him in the armor, showing him being a badass in Ragnarok, and then, like, have there be, like, kind of tee up the possibility, if it goes over well, mm-hmm. to do a Hulk movie and have that be Planet Hulk. I think you could do it, and the way that you have the universe set up, and I think it'd be fucking sick as hell.
Well, we've seen, like, in Avengers, we see Hulk, you know, during the scene where they fight, you know, the big climax battle scene at the end, he seems to be kind of self-aware. He's not just a rage monster. Mm-hmm. I mean, he, you know.
At the very least, he knows who his teammates are and who the enemies are.
Yeah, and he does that jokey punch where he, you know, punches Thor.
Yep.
And stuff. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be out of the realm of possibilities.
No.
Is what I'm trying to say.
And then Marvel's Captain Marvel movie, they've announced that they've cast Brie Larson as Carol Danvers. Which is cool because Brie Larson is not a name that I heard anybody say, like, on the Tumblrs of, you know, fan casting. But she apparently really digs the role because she posted on Instagram a picture of her reading Kelly Sue DeConnick's run while in Captain Marvel pajamas.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which is fucking great. And it's like, it's also like, Henry Cavill reminds me of this a lot of the same too. I don't really that much care for the Zack Snyder style Superman, but I get the feeling Henry Cavill in getting cast in Superman has turned into a genuine Superman fan. Like, he goes to Comic-Con and, like, wears a little mask and buys, like, classic Superman stuff at these conventions. Like, I genuinely believe that he's a fan of a character. And so it's really cool to see Brie Larson kind of becoming a fan of the character she's going to play. And that just, it feels good. It feels good knowing that when you watch her on screen, she knows, and that she has a genuine interest in portraying the character well, too. And I don't know about Gal Gadot, but that Wonder Woman trailer also looks fucking sick. I'm really excited for women in comics, like, in the next coming years.
I thought Gal Gadot was excellent as Wonder Woman in Batman vs. Superman. Yes. In fact, I think she was the highlight of the movie.
Yes. So a lot of people agree with you.
The trailer, you know, the trailer looks great, so I'm excited. Should be cool.
So the thing of the trailer that's supposed to make you go, oh shit, that's sick, is when, like, she's storming up with a shield against the guys that are shooting at her, and the da-da-da-da-da syncs up to the bullets that are getting fired.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's cool and all, but for me, the best part of the trailer was when you see the front of her, and she's in, like, this elegant blue gown, and then as she's walking through the room, you get the view of the back of her, and there's a fucking sword down the back of her dress.
Yeah.
I'm like, yes, that is Wonder Woman. Elegance and beauty and composure and badass warrior. Yes, she's a female character, she's a woman, and she can be a badass, and she can be both. And there's nothing wrong with that, and it's this person is the complete embodiment of all of that together. And she can be because she's a goddess.
Yep.
Yep. What else? Justice League trailer's cool. Aquaman's the best part of it.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Aquaman.
Actually, I thought the Flash was
the super slow-mo catching the batarang. Can I keep this?
Yeah, I thought the whole exchange with Bruce Wayne was fun.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it is he supposed to be Barry Allen?
Yes, he's supposed to be Barry. Yeah.
I don't think that's really like the Barry that we know from the comics, but I thought it was I have high hopes. I have high hopes for all the DC movies, even though I'm generally let down every time. To some degree.
That's very optimistic of you, I gotta say.
You know what, though? Actually, with Wonder Woman and Justice League, so around the time that these movies were in production is when Geoff Johns was named, like, the executive head of DC Studios, the same way that, like, Marvel has Kevin Feige, to kind of bring everything together and make it a cohesive universe. And DC didn't have anybody, Warner Brothers didn't have anybody like that for the DC movies, and they've installed Geoff Johns there. So he was installed partway through the production of these movies. So I have, who knows how much influence he's had, but he's a pretty good producer of TV shows and stuff, and I think he's a pretty good writer, and I mean, what I think about his love of nostalgia and his, like, over-affection for some of his characters here or there, he's great at building a huge cohesive storyline and a massive world. Like, the stuff that they want to do on screen, he's good at doing. So, who knows how much control he's had in this, but, I mean, fingers crossed.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the compared to the Marvel movies, the DC movies are not as good, but they're not like
not bad.
Garbage fires. They're not. Yeah. They're not complete garbage fires. You know, the problem is they're so big and like flashy and stuff like that that it kind of it makes the bad parts stand out. Like I thought Ben Affleck was fine as an old Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, I think so too.
And like I said, I thought Gal Gadot was great in Batman vs. Superman. But Batman vs. Superman, part of the issues I had with it is it felt like it was setting up the, you know, it was setting up future movies too much, you know, like the whole where their Batman is like looking at the security camera footage and it shows all the different members of the Justice League is like, come on.
Yeah. That's a bit much. Yeah. I generally feel like the DC movies come off as trying so much harder. You know?
Yeah.
It's like they're the kid in the class who wants to be the class clown, so he's trying really hard to make a joke all the time. I feel like that's DC. They're trying really hard to be badass and cool, guys. They're trying so hard.
Well, I think part of the problem is they're trying to differentiate themselves from Marvel, which is, I think, a good thing, but they're trying too hard to be... They're spending so much time and energy trying to not be Marvel that it's they haven't figured out what works for them. They just know what they don't want to do, and whatever is left is what we see on the screen. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think Marvel's formula is kind of like summer blockbuster with action, humor, and a little bit of drama. And DC is looking at that, and they're like, you know, Marvel's light. Even Civil War felt fairly light to me. It didn't feel like dark or very like emotionally like, I mean, it had tense moments, but it wasn't like gritty. But I feel like DC is trying to exude grittiness in their movies and it just doesn't, it makes sense for Batman to some degree because of the history there with like 90s Batman, but I don't know, like, the grittier version of Superman, I mean, okay, biased because I don't like Superman, but it didn't do it for me, you know? And I don't know if gritty summer blockbuster is a good way to go.
Yeah, and I mean the other thing that I saw posted somewhere, I don't know, somebody said like there's a problem, like my kids grew up and I was showing them the old Batman, this is not me, but somebody posted that like they were making their kids watch the old Batman animated series cartoons because they're really good cartoons and they have good lessons and they're fun to watch and they're, you know, almost flawlessly well made. And so this poster's kids became fans of Harley Quinn because Harley Quinn's a great, fun character in that show. And they wanted to watch Suicide Squad. And yeah. It's like, no, you can't take your kids to these superhero movies. You can take your kids to Marvel's movies. You know, some of them way more than others. Don't take your kids to Daredevil. But for the most part, you can take your kids to Marvel movies. I don't see a world where you take anybody under the age of like 12 to a DC movie. It just, I don't, mm-hmm. I can't. And Marvel's doing its gritty stuff too, but it's doing it on Netflix, where they don't have to worry about boundaries as much and where there's, you know, a way more burden of responsibility. Like, if you load up Netflix, find the show, and put it in front of your kids, like, that's on you. There's trailers, like, this is obviously not the experience, like, go out and do with your family experience. This is on Netflix, you can catch it on your bus ride to work. That's where you can watch that Daredevil.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the thing, like, I think part of, well, okay, all of Marvel's success, and I'm saying this not to pan it, but because I think that this is what has made it so successful, is that it has mass appeal. It has something for everyone. Like, people have talked about the Marvel movie formula, where it's like, you know, you look at the timestamps, and they time out their movies in this pattern, and it's like, there's going to be a funny quip here for the kids. There's going to be an action scene here for the people who like that. There's a little bit of romance sprinkled in, but not too much. There's a little bit of drama. And then it like cycles through and it keeps the audience engaged by giving everyone something as it goes through, like progressively. And it's a brilliant formula for making money and making, you know, successful movies. But part of the reason that works is because like, okay, like, David, you want to go see Avengers, but you don't have to find a babysitter. You can bring your wife and kids, and, you know, like, it's good for the family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, see, the thing is, DC Comics does have something for everyone, but they are not taking the same risks that Marvel did by using some of their more B-list characters. Like, Iron Man, I don't think was a A-list character to the non-comic reading public, you know? And so I think starting with Iron Man was a risky proposition, but they found the perfect person to portray Tony Stark, and they did such a good job making the movie that it elevated the popular appeal of Iron Man. And, you know, with DC, how many Batman movies have there been, you know?
See, but I think...
And Superman movies. So I think maybe the fact that they're going to do a Wonder Woman movie might be a step in the right direction.
Yeah, and Wonder Woman's supposed to be one of their A-listers, but, I mean, let's be real, the way that she's treated most often. What they really should do is is a blue and gold buddy cop movie.
Yeah.
I think they need to first, you know, get some good higher level characters.
Yeah. No, but I think Marvel was put into that position accidentally. By the time they started Marvel Studios, they had already licensed out a lot of their A-listers. X-Men were all off the table because those were gone.
Yeah.
Spider-Man was gone to somebody else. Fantastic Four, well, you know, I don't know if they were A-list, but they were gone. So they were in a position where they had to use a B-lister. Because Captain America's great, no, but I think they didn't want to do Captain America because Captain America kind of falls into the Superman problem where he's a little bit too perfect. He's not necessarily interesting on his own. You got to place him in a more complex world. You know, place a perfect person with impeccable morals into somewhere with a gray area and see what they do. That's a formula for all kinds of good shows. That's the formula for fucking Star Trek, to be honest. Place impeccable morals into a gray area.
Well, I think what was great with doing Iron Man first and following it with Captain America is that having Iron Man gave somebody, or having Iron Man already in the picture gave Captain America a foil.
Yeah.
That wasn't a villain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they have the same goals, but they, you know, they're, Tony Stark is more of a ends justify the means kind of guy.
Mm-hmm. So, speaking of taking your kids to the movies, do not take your kids to see Doctor Strange because they will vomit all over the theater.
Yeah.
Is it a motion sickness problem? Yeah.
The trailer is like Inception on steroids.
Oh, God. Okay. I've seen the trailer, but I was thinking that, okay, I can't watch it in the theater then because I'm like a small child in that regard.
See, part of me wants to wait and watch it at home, and part of me wants to go see it in like 3-story tall domed IMAX 3D. Like,
I can't watch 3D movies.
Let's go all in.
No. I'm going to watch that one on my phone. That's what's going to happen.
All right, the world is bendy, but it is 5 inches
diagonal. Yeah, I can handle that.
Okay.
But
it looks really good. It just also looks trippy as hell.
Also, Tilda Swinton, yes. I love her.
Yeah, she looks cool. She's always a great, a great addition.
And I love the kick joke at the end of the trailer too, the Wi-Fi password.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We're not that was savages. Pretty funny.
So the other things that came out recently is there was a teaser for Iron Fist and Luke Cage, and then subsequently there's been a full Luke Cage trailer.
Yeah, the Luke Cage looks sick as hell. I can't wait for that. Iron Fist, we need more info. So cool. Iron Fist, like, okay. There's some scenes and a little bit of voiceover and some dramatic music. Great. There's not enough there for me to go, oh, fuck yeah. Same with Defenders. Defenders is literally just music and logos.
Yeah. Okay. But great. Man, Luke Cage looks so fucking cool. Where they're doing they show the experiment and he gets out of the thing and he's got the, like, tiara and the gauntlets. He looks just like his original costume.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks great. I'm excited.
Yeah. Out of the stuff we talked about, that's what I'm, I think, most excited for is Luke Cage. Because that's going to be the fucking buddy cop.
Luke Cage. Here's the thing, right? Like, I agree with you. Because, like, Netflix, the shows have been so good, and you just get... It's a full season of TV, right? So you just get more. There's so much more than watching a movie. Not to say the movies are not as... The movies are great, too. But, man, Daredevil was so good. Both seasons of Daredevil were so good.
Yeah. Yeah, from what I saw, it was good. But
you didn't watch all 2 seasons, Andy?
No, man, I had to stop partway through the first season of Daredevil when he hammers his dad's brains in.
Oh, my God, you're missing out on...
Finish it.
I could not get through that, man. I just skip
that part.
I'll give it another shot.
Yeah, if you fast forward through it, you're gonna be able to guess what happens. It's not like a plot twist where the hammer doesn't do its job.
No, I know. Yeah. Okay. You guys ready to talk about this comic?
Yeah, okay, let's talk about it.
I'm done being shamed.
Shame. Aww. Shame.
No, it's not that bad.
This week's comic.
This week we read Before Watchmen, Minutemen. It collects 6 issues written by Darwin Cook. This is the second episode in our tribute to Darwin Cook. So we have not read Watchmen, and we're never going to read Watchmen. But Before Watchmen was a promo thing that DC did. They did a bunch of different runs about the characters and stuff from Before Watchmen, and called it Before Watchmen. Generally was considered a money grab and critically panned, but Minutemen by Darwin Cook did well, and Silk Spectre by Amanda Conner got a lot of really good respect too. So we decided to pick this one up because it's aside from being a good Darwin Cook comic, it's notable that it's like a not an event comic, because it wasn't like a universe crossover event or anything, but kind of an event style comic that generally was really well received. But I have to confess, I didn't immediately remember who the Minutemen were, and I hadn't read Watchmen in a long time, so it took me a little while to get into this. But when I did, I got into it pretty. I think I got into it most when Dollar Bill came around, not because he's such a great character or anything, just the stupid pun Dollar Bill being a sponsored bank hero, and then his name is actually Bill.
I
just want to put it out there right now, like, I really, really like how Dollar Bill died.
Yeah, that was one of the ones.
Like, that was oof, but it's okay. You expect it to happen sometime when people wear capes and you never see it, and finally, like, here it is. This is the problem with capes.
Well, that was a thing in The Incredibles, the woman who designs the costumes.
No capes.
Yeah, no capes.
Well, she's right.
Yeah.
You'll get stuck in a revolving door.
Yeah.
Oh.
Poor guy.
He's the only one with the cape on the team, too, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hooded Justice.
His noose gets him in trouble. It's also a good point. Who the fuck wears a noose around their neck?
Yeah. Median, like, flips him over with that. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and that, well, later, Night Owl
uses
it, so
yeah, he
it was also a bad plan. Yeah.
Man, the comedian, fuck that guy. You know, because in the original, in the Watchmen comic, the Alan Moore Watchmen, comedian just seems like an asshole. And, like, okay, I get there are guys out there who are just dicks, and fuck those people, but yeah, sure, whatever. But this comic, I liked the character of Comedian better, because he was the same dickbag, but at the end you realize, out of all of them, he might have been the best hero. Even though he was a complete bag of dicks.
So, what do you guys think of his retconned, like, redemption story, explaining why he's so bad?
I don't think it was necessary. I'm kind of ambivalent towards it, to be honest.
I mean, I think that was, I think, the entire point of the Before Watchmen thing DC did. Let's change these characters a little bit, and maybe if they're good, we can put them back into the mainstream of our universe.
Well, you know that that's happened, right?
Yeah, because now Vertigo is part of the DC universe. Yeah.
No. Like Dr. Manhattan is like a main character in. Since the DC Rebirth thing.
Yes.
Really?
Him and, I think, Ozymandias are, like, bad guys.
I don't know how I feel about that. I don't think I'm happy.
Because all of the Vertigo stuff is considered part of the DC universe now.
Right. But this is the first time we've, like, actively seen the Watchmen interacting with DC characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is what I mean, yeah.
I mean, like, I knew it interacted, but, like, putting them in as villains seems it's not for me.
Well, Ozymandias, definitely.
It feels weird to have Manhattan be a villain, because I feel like Manhattan was just like, I'm just going to walk off and be, like, kind of, do, like, sort of god things, so later, everybody. Which is what he should do, and if he does that, like, then he shouldn't interact too much with humanity at that point?
Well, okay, maybe saying that he's a... They're villains is the wrong thing, but they're like, they're kind of shadowy. You don't know what they're doing.
Okay. Because I was going to say, like, here's the problem with this comic. It's really hard for me to talk about this comic without going back and talking about Watchmen in detail. I lost my train of thought, is what I mean. Anyway.
Andy, I know we're never going to talk about Watchmen, but I'm probably going to talk about Watchmen.
No, in this episode, we can lift our ban on Watchmen. You have to.
We're just going to talk about We're going to talk about this comic in the context of Watchmen.
Yeah, so was Byron in Watchmen? Because I think Byron was my other favorite character of this comic. The Mothman guy.
He was like, in that... They had that, like, montage at the beginning of the movie. At the beginning of the comic, where it kind of, like, was news clippings of the Minutemen and stuff. And they showed his death, I think. Like, he...
I think he got carted away to an asylum because he had a drinking problem, right? Yeah,
that's true. You're right, Jen.
And he's by the dandy, he's just completely clocked out. Like, there's that scene where he's just sitting at the edge of the dock, just staring, and doesn't bother to say a word anymore.
Yeah. The way that they're incorporated into the Watchmen comic is as, like, end pieces between each issue. Hollis Mason's book, Under the Hood, has, like, a 2 or 3 page excerpt where you actually just read what he wrote with, like, pictures and news articles, like David said.
Yeah.
So that's how we find out about them in the first place.
That's right. Yeah. I loved Byron's character in this one, from start to finish. Like, I liked as he's explaining how, like, Byron got shit for being called a coward and all this and that, but really, like, every single time he had to take off, like, just he was the most, I think, understandable and sympathetic of all of them, in that his flaws were, it felt like a natural result of how his quote-unquote power worked.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it was the most, like, it was the most tragic thing, because he wants to be a hero, but the only way he can be a hero is by drinking, and by drinking he stops being such a good hero. And I love that at the end, when he gives Hollis the garage, it's like, and Hollis says it was his last act, because he knew he was going to lose it. He knew it was leaving him. And, like, oh, that's so rough, because he just hadn't been drinking. He was a bro all the way to the end. He was such a good bro.
I really like Byron in that he, I think, most succinctly, like, embodied what was the whole, like, thrust of the original Watchmen comic, in that, like, it's a satire on heroes, and these heroes are shitty people, but then they're doing questionably good things as well. Like, Ozymandias is actually trying to save the world. And Byron is a good way to portray someone who wants to be heroic and is, like, both winning and failing at it simultaneously. Mm-hmm. It's not, like, one-sided, because, you know, like, Batman is so, for instance, he beats people up and that's bad, but he's also, like, the hero that Gotham needs. And Superman is, I think, there's a lot of one-sided portrayals of Superman where he's, like, so good and so perfect and so heroic. Same with Captain America, or just anyone. And here we have Byron, and he's, okay, a lot of comics deal with struggles that heroes face, but I think Byron's is purely internal. He doesn't have any real issues with, like, villains or people he's fighting, or even, like, people on his team. He's just forcing himself to go out there.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like you said, it's like this terrible cycle of he makes himself a worse hero by drinking, but it's the only way he can do it. So I think, like, that irony works really well in describing, like, the whole, like, tonal gist of the original Watchmen.
All right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Damn, you nailed it better than I did. Shit.
Dude, to segue, I really like Silhouette as well.
I think she was the most genuine hero out of everybody on the team.
Yeah. And I think she's the one that you're supposed to sympathize with. Like, she has a legitimate... this is true in non-cynical Cape comics. She had a niche of a type of heroic that she wanted to do, where, like, she was all about saving children, and that happens, and anything that wasn't about saving children or actually saving people, she knew was bullshit, and she was willing to call it as bullshit. And so she goes to this Minutemen thing, and she's like, most of what we do here is bullshit, but I'm going to keep coming because every once in a while, one or two of these people actually helps me do something worthwhile. And she, I think she realized very rarely, is she going to go to the meeting and do the thing that they want to do and actually have it be worth her time? But it is worth her time to get their help. Which, like, I don't know about you, but that is, like, my entire experience in my work day. I go to meetings, not because I expect anything to be done, but because eventually I'm going to need a favor from somebody else at that meeting. And if I go to the meeting, then it's a good opportunity to show that I am competent and to figure out how the other competent people are and to get their help later. Like, that is my office modus operandi. So I totally sympathize with Silhouette and how she operates in here. And it makes it so much more tragic when she dies for fucking bullshit dumb reasons.
Yeah, but I mean, it's also like really, I think her death is really interesting because it's something that happened to people.
Yeah.
People would get killed because of their sexuality, and people still do. And like, she's a hero and she saves the children and she's so badass, and there's nothing she can do to prevent this. It's really sad, but it's also like, I found her story to be like just the most, one of the most human, I think. And also like Night Owl and her, their whole like thing where he's in love with her and she knows and like she's still kind of using him. It's really tragic.
Mm-hmm. And you know, come to think of it, like none of these people die in any heroic way, right?
Mm-mm.
None of them do.
It's true.
Which is a great, because the other thing Darwin Cook does in this a lot is talk about how in retrospective what they were doing was crazy, and they, you know, what they had no right doing it, and they, you know, like I think Hollis even says something like, you know, what was I doing? I should have just been a cop, and instead of when I should have been on the beat, I was running around in short shorts trying to be a hero, and in the end, like, you can try to be a hero all you want, but you're not gonna, none of these people die a hero. None of these people really even did too much very heroic. And I love the irony in it. The irony seems to pervade this. Like, their first thing as a team, they go and they bust the fucking fireworks ring and they change it and they alter the story and they put that in front of the public. And the whole public knows about this thing. They don't know what really happened. But they advertise their fuck up so much. And then on the flip side, the one thing they do that is actually heroic when they save Liberty Island gets covered up. And that seems to be a great anachronism for their entire lives. Like, they try in their head and in their memories and their recollection, they're trying so hard to play up the good things that they've done. But when you actually look at how things ended and what good they did on the level, I don't know. Did they? I mean, Sally Jupiter sure got vengeance for Silhouette, but she killed a motherfucker.
Yeah, and well, that's the thing. It's like, was it worth it for any of them? I don't know.
And we get, I mean, and Sally Jupiter kills a motherfucker, and you feel great about it. So that then when Night Owl goes and kills a motherfucker, you feel good about it, and then Comedian comes in and shits all over you.
But I don't know if I felt good about Sally Jupiter doing that, because I know. Okay, so she felt bad that she treated Silhouette like shit. But still, she treated Silhouette like shit. It seemed more like she was doing it for herself than Silhouette in some ways. Because she feels guilty, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. I mean, in like Andy said, it felt good to us as readers because, you know, she's getting... She's giving Silhouette some justice, but you're right. It definitely is for Sally's own conscience, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe not 100%, but that's definitely a huge part of the reasons that she did that at all.
Yeah, it's retribution. And these characters are good at doling out retribution. I don't know about justice. I don't remember how many times did they actually get people in cuffs and send them to jail.
They kind of talk about it, but, you know, it's weird because as he's recalling these things, he shows you, like, the real-life shitty incident that happened, and then he's like, and then we put away some bad guys and did some good stuff, and then it's juxtaposed with, like, the little comic snippet from the comic about the Minutemen that he, like, picks up and reads sometimes.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, like see Silhouette, the patron saint of children, or like the mighty dollar bill, that kind of stuff. And what you're seeing is like, you're told they do good things, you're seeing them do shitty things, and then you're seeing this public portrayal. So, like, as a reader of this, I don't know, is Hollis Mason a reliable narrator when he says, like, oh yeah, we did some good?
I mean, I think they do every once in a while, but
is it coincidental? And here's the thing, I mean, I think a lot of the heft of Watchmen is that people are still people before they're heroes. And I think that carries over very heavily as a theme in Minutemen here.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, these are all people. And the interesting part, to me at least, is are they people because they're being portrayed as people by the person authoring this comic? And I don't mean Darwin Cook, but I mean like Hollis Mason within the comic itself.
Mm-hmm.
Or are we getting like an actual view of just who they are and, like, you know, they're shitty.
I mean, I think go David.
I was just going to say, I think Hollis Mason's goal writing the book was to show the real people behind these masks, because the public within the Watchmen universe was aware of the public persona. And the reason he's doing the tell-all book is to tell the real story about these people. Good or bad. Mostly bad, because they're pretty shitty individuals, but I think that's why I think maybe the point of Hollis saying, oh, we also did some good things, and then, you know, showing the comic is to show what the public perception was, maybe? As opposed to what the reality is, which is what Hollis Mason's showing, right?
I mean, we're definitely getting this narrative through Hollis's view, in which case, I mean, he's working from a standpoint where the public who would be buying this book know of the good deeds, so he doesn't need to necessarily recount those. But what I find interesting in the way that he frames the narrative, he talks about Night Owl all the time, and every once in a while he'll bring up how he's a beat cop and how, you know, here he was off, you know, running from his shift to go help Silhouette, or running from his shift to go to this, that, like, or and taking off his uniform and getting into his tights to chase this, that, or the other person. And I think what goes on there is he's bringing it up, I think, because he doesn't realize. I think he was a better hero as a police officer. You know, like, I don't necessarily see him having put away too many more people as a police officer than as Night Owl. But as an officer, we see him being a visible symbol of reliable authority and justice in his community. And we see him help people more as a police officer than we do as Night Owl. As Night Owl, we see him help Silhouette every once in a while, and we see him try really hard to do more than what his uniform will let him do. But from my recollection, having read this like a week ago now, because we kept delaying the recording that we're doing for this, from my recollection, he did more good in his police uniform than he did as Night Owl.
Yeah, and I think that's true. I mean, we see him he's often worried that what he's doing as Night Owl is going to get him in trouble as a police officer, because he, you know, even though he is running around in this costume and trying to do heroic things, he also knows that he's breaking the law.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a, you know, it's a concern for him, because we see it in his narration, you know, he breaks it up. So I don't know. I think the what you brought up, Andy, about him being a symbol in this community, was very important from Darwin Cook's perspective, to show that Night Owl, to show that he probably did more as a cop, like you were saying. I don't know. I kind of rambled there. Sorry.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Yeah. Because as Night Owl, he's sneaking around, and sure, I mean, you could be a symbol as a superhero, but you don't know that person's name. They're a vigilante. They don't have any accountability. It could be Batman or Punisher just as well as it could be Superman. You don't necessarily know. but a guy in a police officer uniform who you see and can interact with and know is a good dude and know is from the community and helps you fix your car, that's far more useful. And I think he doesn't even realize it. I think it's in his subconscious and it gets to him, but I don't think he realizes it in his own retelling.
Well, maybe he realizes it after the fact. I mean, because the narrator of the comic is Hollis Mason, yeah. So maybe he does realize it in the end when he's retelling. But his book is about the Minutemen, so they're still the focus.
Yeah. What was your What was some of your guys' favorite moments in this?
Oh, that's a good question.
Maybe not favorite. It's too like dire of a comic, I think, to have a favorite moment. I mean, for me, it's when Byron gives Hollis the garage, because that's such a sweet moment. But then also, I think when Hollis is older and goes to Sally Jupiter. And asks her if she's read the book and what she thinks of it. And Sally Jupiter's is like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, we need to put this behind us. And that's when you realize she's the only one out of everyone who was on this team who had a kid. And she might not have been a good person, and she might not be a great mother, but at least she's looking out for her kid. And she's thinking about, I think more than herself, even though she's very self-centered when she's younger, I think when we get that view of her older, she's thinking about the ramifications this book will have for her daughter. And I like that scene because it's a perspective you don't get when he goes and visits these other heroes who you sense are just in it to protect themselves.
Hmm. Yeah.
Boom. What about you guys? Do you have a scene that stuck with you?
Let me think. I don't know. Like you said, this comic's kind of dire, and it's not like a lot of the other comics where we read where there's, you know, particularly epic or action-packed scenes. It's just kind of this slog of these people's lives falling apart, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the highlight is when they save Liberty Island.
And yeah,
that's a great piece, but then it just gets completely cut the legs out from under it when it gets covered up and the kid dies, and Hollis even says like some dork drops his glasses and gets superpowers like a god, and this kid who literally saved millions of lives dies in 6 days. Mm-hmm. Like whatever good feeling you got from them actually saving people that you had, gone. Just gone in seconds.
You know, one thing that I thought, so I remember thinking back and reading the original Watchmen comic and watching the movie, they show the murder scene of Silhouette, right? And her partner. And one of the things that kept coming up in this comic was this hypocrisy about from Hooded Justice and what's his name, the leader guy,
Captain Metropolis.
Yeah, Captain Metropolis. Oh, yeah. This their hypocrisy, because they have a sexual relationship, but they kick Silhouette out because it turns out that she's a lesbian, right?
Yeah.
And I wonder if that was something that Alan Moore thought about when he was writing the original comic, like that Hooded Justice and Captain Metropolis would have this relationship.
Oh, I can actually answer that, I think.
Okay.
So I believe that was implied in Watchmen. And like I said, like way at the start of this podcast, the last time I read the comic was actually 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But
it's been a while for me too, that's why I don't remember.
I do recall reading something, however, where I guess somewhere early in the actual Watchmen comic, there's a scene in a diner with two old men who kind of look like they could be Hooded Justice and Captain Metropolis. So there was this whole fan theory that was put forth that said, like, oh, it's them, they faked their own deaths and are, like, living happily ever after. And this is obviously before Hooded Justice was, like, retconned into some weird abusive BDSM man.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, the fan said this, and Dave Gibbons, the illustrator, the penciler and inker, blah, 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 Artist is the word there I'm looking for.
Artist,
it's
yeah.
It's been a long day.
It's late.
Yeah, the artist for the original Watchmen comic said, that's not what I was originally going for, but it's not, like, out of the question. So I'm thinking, if he said that back in the day, then there must have been something to give people that implication, because I don't think, like, back in the 80s, people were, like, you know, like, tumbling it up and being all ship happy about, like, random couples, right? That there must have been something in there to say, like, these guys could have been a pair.
Okay.
Yeah.
Legit.
All right.
So
now you know.
So, I feel like we talked about a lot last week. Darwin Cook's style feels awesome and classic, and, I don't know what it was, but this one I got a much better sense of faces, and I could tell who people were more. I think he was going for a certain aesthetic with New Frontier that he nailed, but it made out-of-costume dudes difficult to differentiate. but we don't have that problem here. At least I don't think we did. The face work was even better than it was in New Frontier, and the art overall was awesome. And the coloring was, I don't know if you guys have seen this, the coloring was Filinoto. So this is just a fantastically done art all the way through. And I feel so bad because I'm like, I just wish this would have been a better subject because it's just not my thing. I'm not into dire make you feel shitty comics, but it's just, you can't argue with the quality of the art all the way through this whole damn thing.
I want to say the art was an utter mindfuck for me. I couldn't reconcile. It's like classic, happy, like, you know, just post-World War II style with the actual subject matter. So it's like, you know, the comedian wearing his dumb helmet and mask, and he looks so, like, shiny out in the Pacific. And then, like, there's this woman with half her face burned off and her dead child. And it's like,
Oh, God, that scene.
Yeah, like, the comedian, like, the shading of the lighting on his face there, it looks so bright and cheerful, and, like, even where he looks like he wants to just, like, collapse and die out of sadness, like, the colors are so nice, and it was like that for the whole thing. And I think, like, part of it, I was like, what does that mean? What is it telling me? But the other half of me, I'm like,
incongruity.
Yeah. And no, I liked it. I feel like it actually provided a really good vibe. Because, again, like, I keep going back to this. It's the whole, like, the whole Watchmen thing of, like, it looks so nice to be a hero, but it's actually really horrible. So it fits, but it really messed with my head.
Yeah. Another point for Jen.
Yay.
We should start handing out points like whose line is it anyway?
Just arbitrarily. But
they mean nothing.
Yeah, that's fine. It's just like our rating system. Speaking of, you guys want to do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like we barely scratched the surface of this comic, but we rambled on a lot about trailers and stuff. Sorry. Plus, I don't know. This is just not, like I just said a minute ago, this is just not my topic. I can recognize a lot of the awesomeness that's in here, but it's not my thing. So let's go ahead and rate it. I'll go first. I never go first. I'll go first. I'm going to give this a 3.5. Like I was saying, I totally recognize the art and craft that went into this thing front to end, but it's not my cup of tea. Yeah. That said, if I feel like if I'm going to read something dire, if I really want to read the behind the mask, what it's really like when an asshole becomes a superhero, I mean, these guys aren't assholes. Not all of them. Hollis Mason just seems to be a legitimately just good dude trying to do good things. Same with Byron. And Sally Jupiter honestly just wants to do good things. She's self-centered, but she's heart in the right place. Hood of Justice, I don't know if he's got this heart in the right place. And Lord knows the comedian doesn't. Nelson, sure. Kinda. But yeah, I'm gonna give it a 3.5. I appreciate so much about this comic. It's just not my thing. Jen?
I'm gonna give it a 4.5. And I'm actually really glad to get back into the podcast, because when I first read this comic last week, I was like, what did I just read? Why? I was really unsettled and I didn't know how to feel about it. But now that I'm talking about it, so I've realized I'm one of those people who could probably just talk at you about Watchmen for maybe 6 hours straight. I guess it's good that we won't do it as a podcast, because that's just too long for an episode. But,
you know, if we ever do a panel at a convention where we're going to do a live episode, we will do Watchmen.
Oh, God.
So that you can just talk for 6 hours. I'll Skype you in from Germany.
Yeah. Oh.
Sorry.
Yeah, I can. Totally no, I can see that happening. Just, I had a mental image there. After discussing this, I'm like, there is so much here, and there are so many, I think, purposeful incongruities showing you the theme of this comic. And I'm just going to leave it at that. I actually really like that about it. So 4.5.
Sick. David?
All right. I'm going to be firmly in the middle between you two and give it a 4. I think the comic is, it's a well-crafted story, and it definitely, maybe Alan Moore would disagree with this, but I think it fits into the atmosphere of Watchmen. Like, if there was a Watchmen universe, I think this seems to fit in there. But, you know, it's not like a happy, fun comic, but, you know, comics don't have to be that. I mean, we read Black River recently, which was, God. Yeah. I think it's pretty good. It's definitely an above average comic. I haven't read any of the other before Watchmen stuff, so I can't compare it in that regard. But it's good, and Darwin Cook did an excellent job, and so did the rest of the, you know, Phil Noto on the coloring and everything. So, yeah, I'm going to give it it's a solid 4.
All right. That was good. That was good. That's it for this week. Next week we're going to read Parker the Hunter. So Parker, I have never heard of Parker before until I started looking up some of the... I was trying to find stuff that Darwin Cook did that was critically acclaimed, even if not the most well-selling. I know he did Batman really well, he did Catwoman really well, and of course New Frontier. We'd already done Catwoman, but we're going to do Batman and all that kind of stuff. But Parker was like noir detective novel series, like paperback novels, way back when. That's my understanding. I could be way off. But apparently Darwin Cook loved the shit out of them, so he adapted them into comic books. So we're going to read the first one of those, Parker the Hunter. And I have no idea what we're getting in for, but like noir detective-y kind of thing sounds really fucking awesome, done by Darwin Cook, so I'm all down for this. I'm super excited for it, even though I have no idea what I'm excited for. That'll be next week. Until then, you should go to patreon.com/welcometocomics, become a patron today, support the show, go on iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, if you have iTunes, if you do that kind of thing, if you like the show, or if you don't like the show, but hey, you can leave your rating too, fine, let us know what you're doing. But yeah, either way, give us money, go to patreon.com. Goes in. Yeah. Patreon.com/welcometocomics. As much as you want to donate, a penny will get you access to all of it. Yeah, that's it for this week, everybody. Until next week, goodbye!
Goodbye! Goodbye.